Writing well is the pursuit of a lifetime. You may be at mile marker one of this wonderful life journey and thinking for the first time about embracing the life of a writer. Or maybe you're further along and ready to publish some of your ideas. I'm Melissa Parks with Dade Getz, and we are fellow travelers on this extended road trip to improve our writing and publish our ideas. We hope this podcast helps you make progress on your writing journey. Now, let's buckle up and write. If you're a professional, you likely have a LinkedIn account, though for many of us, myself included, we don't use it effectively always to build our brand or generate new business. And new business is what we want to small business owners. Maybe you even wonder if there really is a payoff for actively engaging and posting regularly. Today, we have with us Amy Davies, who I would call a LinkedIn superstar, the CEO of First 30, author of A Spark in the Dark, and a sought-after public speaker. Amy shares practical tips on how to create a following on LinkedIn that translates to new opportunities. She covers everything from when to post, what to post, common mistakes we make when we post, and how to increase engagement. If you're wanting to up your LinkedIn game, I know I am, then today's episode is for you. It is packed with advice from beginning to end, so don't miss a minute. Welcome, Amy, to the podcast. You are a two-timer here with the Journey 66 Writing Podcast, and we are thrilled to have you and talk with you specifically about your huge success on building a following on LinkedIn. But before we get started, can you tell us a little bit about who you are, what First 30 is, and just how you got started? Tell us a little bit about your journey.
Sure. Thanks so much for having me back. I really love what you guys do, and I always enjoy talking to you. So I have a business called First 30, and our business is focused on employee onboarding, so the first 30 days, and then outplacement. So when companies lay their staff off, our services go longer than 30 days, but we say we're the final 30, so helping them recover from the job loss and get back to work. A few years ago, I published a book called A Spark in the Dark, and that's all about having a successful career in what I call a reorg world, where we're constantly losing and changing our jobs. And I'm currently working on a book called What Employees Want. So more for our HR community and, you know, business owners or business leaders. And I do some corporate speaking as well. Yeah. So since we last spoke, I actually am part of a speakers bureau. So that's been also really a lot of fun.
Let's circle back to the Speakers Bureau and how you did that. I think that might be also very valuable.
And today we're going to talk a lot about this. It's all about connection, isn't it? So someone I knew, it can be really hard to get into speaking bureaus. Someone I knew someone who runs a speaking bureau. It's not my core business. And I think that is also important. And as we talk through all of this, it's like thinking through, what is your core business? What do you have time for? But it's something I really enjoy, and it's something that I like to think I'm good at. So she came and saw me speak at a talk. I was already getting some talks on my own. And I think it does actually all link back to what we're going to talk about today. It's been all through LinkedIn that I got talks on my own. She came to see me, liked what she saw, and then agreed to sign me. And it's really great for anyone who's thinking of going this route if you can get someone who will represent you from a speaking bureau, because people worry that they're going to have to give up something, like they're going to have to give up some money. But if you have a really good agent, they're going to get you more for your talk. People have a lot of trouble valuing their own intellectual property and what that is going to mean to an organization or to a group of people attending a conference. So they tend to underestimate that. They often will undercharge. This bureau is going to help you get the rate you deserve, and they're going to take a percentage of that. But they organize everything for you. You basically show up, and it works very well for everyone. It's definitely a mutual benefit there.
So they operate a little bit like a literary agent, it sounds like.
But yes. Yeah.
So you were posting speaking engagements on LinkedIn and she found a particular one that resonated, or many. Can you tell us a little bit more about?
Sure. Yeah. So she was actually through someone that I know, one of my advisors. He said, oh, she would be really, I think you would do really well in her speaking bureau. I'm going to connect you guys. We got connected. She came to one of my talks. Again, she said, you know, it went well. So she was happy to represent me. And that's how our relationship began. It wasn't, when I'm talking about getting talks through LinkedIn, I do get a lot of business and talks through LinkedIn because of the content I post and because of the thought that goes into that. Representing yourself as a speaker can be really challenging and complicated, especially when you're already running a business. So having someone take that piece of it for you, the negotiation, which there's always a negotiation, and then deciding on the specifics about what you're going to talk about, what the organization needs to hear about. You know, sometimes you have a specific talk, but they really want to build in their values and their organization's mission and vision, and that you're the person representing you should help you with all of those things and really have a brief for you so you know how to best support the client.
You mentioned being very strategic about what you post on LinkedIn and also having this limited amount of time about that you have to post on LinkedIn and to give to LinkedIn. And it seems like you are overflowing with ideas and rich content, but how do you determine what you're going to post on LinkedIn? And what is the filter that the content runs through before you post it?
I think for everyone, it's going to be different. And I'm laughing a little bit because some of the posts that I have published that have done the best have been spur of the moment. And I know that seems hard to believe, but we're all writers here. And I love the art of writing. I love communicating a message that matters to me and I think is going to matter to my audience. And sometimes I'm an early riser. I'll wake up and I'll just get something on paper and I'll be like, I just had a brainwave and I put it up. And it's funny because sometimes those posts do the best. And the ones that I put all kinds of thought into, days of work. Sometimes I work with some other, I get a little bit of support on some of the graphics now. And those, they might be meaningful. I always say of LinkedIn, you're either a hero or a zero. And those two things could happen simultaneously. So one day you have a post that's like going gangbusters and the next day you get like two likes. So you have to be prepared for that. But I will say, I wish I could tell you I have a formula, but I am a creative person. And I'm sure like you both are, if you're a creative person, you have to just take that creative energy when it comes to you, and then you have to make the most of it when it happens. And that's why planning is good, because planning will help you on the days where you don't have that inspiration. And the most wonderful thing that LinkedIn has done recently, I don't know if your audience is aware of this, but you can schedule your posts. So if you don't know what I mean by that, look it up, do a search, a Google search on how to schedule LinkedIn posts. When you go to posts, there's a little clock on the post and you can push that clock and you can schedule. So if you have inspiration come to you and you want to get it all done because it's so easy to accidentally erase a LinkedIn post that you've written, get it all in there and then hit schedule. And the beauty of that is if you're uncertain about it, and you thought it was really good at the time and you want to recheck it, you can always review it again before it goes live too.
Speaking of scheduling, do you find that there's an optimal day and time to post on LinkedIn?
I do. For my audience, I'm on the East Coast, so I'm on Eastern time. And I want to make that clear because I work with people and I know people in my network are in Vancouver and I'm always interested that they post like later in the day or earlier, you know what I mean? Like there are times are very different. And so I feel like sometimes my posts get more traction because I feel like I'm at the right time for the business community that is my core group. So I usually try to post by between 8 or 9 a.m. in the morning. Definitely Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday could be a lighter day. And then honestly, Monday, sometimes like this Monday, yesterday I went to see the solar eclipse, but I wasn't inspired to post yesterday. I wanted to get out in the world and do something fun. And I just thought, you know, forget it. I'm not posting today. Everyone's going to be distracted by the eclipse. No one wants to be reading my posts anyway. So knowing when not to post is really good. And you also, you have to be really careful about different things globally that are happening. You don't want to be posting a really upbeat post on a day where there's terrible global news. I try to be conscious of that. And if I have posts scheduled, I will go reflect on whether that's the right time and redo. You sometimes are going to have a miss because if you've got those posts scheduled and something really tragic happens, it could go up. But I do try to manage that. If I know there's certain anniversaries that stand out for me for whatever reason, I try not to post or be too active about things that are totally off that topic on that day.
I would love to hear you talk about tone. The one thing that I've noticed, a lot of men especially, and I have tended to do this, and I think it's wrong, you tend to have a strong point of view and you're trying to kind of preach almost. And I have never seen you do that. And I, one of the things I wanted to ask you, how conscious are you of tone?
Here's the thing. I don't like being told what to do. And I just assume that my audience doesn't like being told what to do. And I think the best way to influence people is by sharing a story and your perspective. And don't expect everyone to agree with you because, you know, you might be sharing something that's new and novel. You might be wrong as well. I don't think a lot of people have heavily researched when they put up their LinkedIn posts. It may just be something that they have an opinion on, right? And when you have those, that's important. It's important to have opinions. I have very strong opinions. Social media is not the place that I use to argue my point of view. It's the place I use to influence as gently as possible. I don't think I'm going to change anyone's mind by starting a debate with them in the comments, which I often see. And I also think that, like, for instance, I had this post that went a bit viral for LinkedIn, talking about my experience having been the victim of a stalker. And I positioned it for my audience because my audience is HR. My HR department at the time did some really amazing things to help protect me. But there's limits to what HR can do. If I'd started that post and said, HR, you must take care of your employees if they are being stalked. Here is why, and here are the three things you need to do better, right? First of all, that's wrong because there's a ton of HR people that are really great at supporting their employees. And I think that sharing a personal experience, just a little bit about what I've gone through to make it more real for people, and then sharing my lived experience of all the things an employer did right. And it's also important to point out the things people are doing right. We're so often quick to jump on it when people are doing the wrong thing. But when your employer has done something right, why not broadcast that as well? That's a great way to influence people to just, you just want them to think a little more about what's going on or how they might react or build a plan or a strategy. If they know, I can't remember what the stats are, but they're quite high in terms of how many women and how many men are stalked over the course of their lifetime. Those are high numbers. So it's worth learning a little more about when you share that type of data. And I did research for that post. If you share that type of data, that's a way of engaging your audience. It might come as a surprise. I hope it comes as a surprise to some people, but it will also help them understand that it's a topic that might be worth a little more investigation and to have a playbook for if it happens to one of your employees, because you never know when something like that's going to happen. But what I find is there is some really amazing people, I consider good people out there, who have vastly different views from mine. Some people might consider that a reason to argue and get angry with them. For me, I find you boil it down to your values. And 9 times out of 10, your values, what you want to see happen as the end result of whatever is going on, is very, very similar. But your route to get there is very different. And so understanding why people believe what they believe is so much better than trying to, or getting angry with them when they're opinion doesn't line up with your opinion or what you thought their opinion would be.
So that was a pretty personal story, being stalked. How do you determine what personal stories you bring to LinkedIn? Is there any sort of filter that you use there deciding how much of my personal self should I bring to this professional platform?
One thing I really try to avoid just in life in general, but also on social media, is trauma dumping. Because I think a lot of us are going through a really, really, it's been a tough, tough, I can't even remember when it hasn't been tough, because it has, through the pandemic and whatnot. And sometimes it can be nice to get that empathy from your network, but I've always avoided that because it seems very, to me, if other people do it, it may be part of their brand or there may be a greater purpose for it. For me, it feels like I don't want to bring other people down, but I would like them, if I can help to educate, then I'm there to do that. If I feel that my intent is off, so if I feel like I'm posting something for the wrong reasons, I will stop. I will not post. There are a lot of things that I haven't posted that I've thought about posting just because I thought this is a bit too much information, or this is going to bring people down, and people have their own problems. I don't need to bring my problems to them. Those are, I lived in England for 6 years, and I think I became like the stiff upper lip. Became very much part of who I am. Again, I don't want to stop people from that, but it's just not something that I choose to do. So that's kind of how I think about what I'm going to post. If there's not something I can teach my network or a way I can help my network or connect with them better, then it's just not something that's going to go up. I personally don't love posting about my kids on LinkedIn either. It's just a personal choice. I have little things, like on International Women's Day years ago, I posted something about the future I wanted for my daughter. But generally speaking, I talk a lot about being a Doberman owner, but I don't talk a lot about raising kids. For me, it's just not the platform to do it.
That's such a good point. It's being sensitive of your platform. We have a lot of authors and consultants who we work with who, they have trouble being personal. And I think it's because they mistake it with like divulging everything about themselves. Mm-hmm. And what I hear you saying is, if you have a personal story that can help lead people to new understanding, then it's valuable to share your personal experience, because it's how you show people a truth. Would you agree with that? Or what would you say to somebody who's uncomfortable starting to share their personal story?
Well, ask yourself, do you want to share it? Like, do you have, I think we've kind of, through social media, we kind of all feel like everyone wants to know our opinions and feelings all the time, everywhere, right? I don't believe that. So if there's things you don't want to share about yourself, you are under no obligation to share anything you don't want to share. What I don't like is when people are absolutely dishonest on social media platforms in general. That's a pet peeve, making everything seem perfect all the time and making the rest of us feel like we're just simply not keeping up. That can be really tough for everyone, and even the individual doing it, because they've got to live up to that fake persona they're putting out there. So I think that for someone who's hesitating, there's a reason you're hesitating. Think about why. And if you're not ready, and the one thing I would say is definitely, we've seen, I would say one of the royals, ex-royals, might have done this recently, but don't post something from a place of anger. I had this horrible work experience years ago. I could laugh about it now. I actually referred to one of my old bosses who ran a company as a budget Logan Roy. But he was terrible to work for, and I could do it, and I could do it in a funny way now. If I had just walked out the door of that office for the last time and went to social media and posted, it would have been a very different post. So wait until your anger and the feelings, like the deep and heavy feelings you have about the situation, have dissipated. And that may, for me, it was years. and then think about how can I use this to serve my network? And I think that's the way I think about how I use LinkedIn. How am I serving my network? Yes, I have a business. Yes, I have a business to grow. The best way to grow that business is by putting incredible content out there that people can use, and they can see how I think and therefore how my business functions, and they can decide whether that's a business they trust. And so that is what I'm doing. I'm trying to serve my network when I'm on social media.
So as you think about the role of social media in your overall marketing efforts, so you as the CEO, you have limited time and you have a budget and you have a marketing plan. And so you say, we're going to do certain activities and we're not going to do other activities to market first 30.
Right.
How does social media fit into that in terms of your time? Is it a big rock? Is it a small rock? How do you see it in the larger picture of your marketing plan?
Depending what kind of business you run and what stage of your business you're at, if you aren't on LinkedIn a few hours a day, you're doing your business a disservice. That's been my experience. LinkedIn is an amazing place to grow your business. First 30, it's been bigger than participating in any conference and in any other investment. I've made a conscious effort not to be on, I was going to say Twitter, but it's not even Twitter anymore. It's X. I'm not on X. I am on Instagram. So if anyone wants to follow me, it's Amy Davies, first 30. You won't see much yet. And that's because I'm still really focused on LinkedIn, but I am trying some different things on Instagram. But it's a different approach I'm taking to Instagram than I take to LinkedIn. Facebook, my business page, gets zero attention. And those are the decisions I've made because I know LinkedIn is where my strongest network and audience is. And I wanted to add, I have made many, many close friends from LinkedIn. Our original engagement was on LinkedIn. One of my neighbors, we met on LinkedIn about, I want to say 10 or 15 years ago. And just so happened, we ended up living in the same neighborhood. We didn't try to do that. But we met over LinkedIn. He sent me a note about something. We got together and we have been friends ever since. And he is someone I go to help me with my business. I help him with his career and business. The woman who works with me quite closely now on our outplacement, Kamara Toffolo, who's amazing on LinkedIn. She and I met through LinkedIn. We work together, but we've also become really close friends. Sherry Angle, who I run all my webinars with, and we work together with each other's businesses. We met on LinkedIn. Nina Gupta, who I do our coffee-in-law Q&A series with. That was all from me connecting with her on LinkedIn and commenting on an article that she was quoted in. And I mean, I could list many, many more actual real-life friends I have made. And our relationship started on LinkedIn.
You talk about 3 hours, and that may be breathtaking for some people, but what are you doing during that 3 hours? It's obviously creating your own content, but you mentioned just a few seconds ago, it's commenting on other people's posts. And what does that look like? How do you spend the 3 hours?
I do have some help. I'll be honest. I do have some help with our email outreach. I do not use a bot, because I know that's something that people consider, but I use a real human being help, and I help with all of the crafting of the messages we send. So sometimes after a webinar, I'll have a person I work with reach out to the people who attended the webinar to see if they wanted to connect. And it doesn't have to be about business. I was just, David, reading your article that you sent through the mail about, I think it was the ABs of sales, right? Yeah. And that I love that article. And it's exactly what we're talking about today, because it's all about building that relationship. And so I use a resource to help me make human connections with people. And then I will meet them for a call. And it's not necessarily, here are our services and here's what I'm going to sell to you. It's like, tell me about yourself. How can I help you? I am here. Here is what we do if you need us. But if not, thanks for connecting. And now I can put a face to the name that I see on the list of people that come to our webinars. So I don't want to make it sound that I get the type of help that depersonalizes the experience. I'm heavily involved with the curation of all of the messages, but I don't hit send on every single one of them. But when someone responds, that is me, like in there responding. You know, you need to know where to get the help. I get help with some of our graphics that I use, but it's me. It's my brand at the end of the day. I'm not going to hand that over to someone else. I'm very, very careful about that. And I think we all should be very careful about that.
Is there something you've given up in terms of marketing and time so that you can focus on this?
Conference organizers are not going to like to hear this very much, but I have said I'm not going to be at a booth. I'm not putting up booths anymore at conferences because I can make so much more headway on LinkedIn than I can having a booth at a conference, like begging people to come over and talk to me. Because what I find about LinkedIn is people are no longer kind of begging to talk to me. They see my presence on LinkedIn. They see what I'm doing. They see the great network that I have and the content I'm putting out there and the success of First 30. And it's an easy connection that way. Instead of standing there at your booth like you're hitchhiking and nobody wants to make eye contact with you, you can be on LinkedIn and connect with an engaged audience. Is it as exciting? Probably not. What I will do is speak at conferences, but I won't exhibit there anymore.
Tell me, do you host all of your webinars exclusively on LinkedIn?
I host all of our webinars on Zoom, and we have great attendance on our webinars. So we have about anywhere from 80 to 150 actual participants in each of our webinars. But, you know, this is where, again, you can take some of what I was talking about doing and help getting support with certain things on LinkedIn. So we actually have someone who invites from my network HR people to our webinars. You know how you get the invites from people to their webinars via LinkedIn? That's because someone is manually going through and inviting specific people from their network to the webinars. So we host them on Zoom, and you're not going to get everyone. So if you see someone on LinkedIn, they have like 400 people say they're going to that webinar, but it's a Zoom link. It doesn't mean that 400 people have registered on Zoom, by the way. You have to convert those people. You have to get them onto your Zoom and then onto your mailing list. And I know from our previous discussions about this discussion, you wanted to talk a little bit about mailing list versus LinkedIn. So maybe now's a good time to kind of talk a little bit about that. Mailing lists are critical. So don't think LinkedIn is not a replacement for your mailing list, but you need to know how to use your mailing list versus how to use your LinkedIn. And that might be through trial and error. I can tell you my approach. It doesn't mean it's going to be the approach that works for you. Every week or 2 weeks, I don't overwhelm people with my mail outs. Every week or 2 weeks, I send a mail out, invite them to one of our webinars, or I give them a really good piece of content as well. When I find I email people individually via email, things get a little quiet because I think they assume that they see my name. They don't know me all that well, that it's another kind of message to everyone, right? Not a direct message to them. So what I've started doing is I pretty much try to connect with everyone who's on our mailing list on LinkedIn. When I want to send them a personal note, I actually do it through LinkedIn to invite them to meet with me, to say, hey, I've noticed you've been coming to a lot of our webinars lately. Did you want to grab a Zoom coffee? That's it. Again, I'm not trying to sell them anything. And even on the call, I've literally had people say to me, when they are agreeing to meet, please do not pitch me during our call. And I'm like, absolutely not. I will not pitch you. One of our biggest clients, that's how our relationship started. Do not pitch me. By the end of the conversation, we had a great chat. She is wonderful. I really, really like her. And at the end of the chat, she's like, so you actually have an outplacement business, right? And I'm like, yeah, I do. Oh, can you tell me a little bit more about that? And I told her about it, and she's become one of our biggest clients. But again, I really like her. I genuinely like her. So it's easy to build a relationship with her. And I never, ever once pushed my products and services to her.
You mentioned that individual invite via LinkedIn. Tell me what exactly you're doing.
It's a very manual process. So you're actually going into your event and you're clicking the invite button. And then you are clicking on, you can search by region, by industry, whatever you want, or you can just take your whole list. For me, it's like 12,000 people now. So you have to click one by one by one by one and then send an invite. And then you go through one by one by one by one and send an invite. It's a very slow and tedious process. I think it's set up to be incredibly frustrating because LinkedIn does not want you spamming your network. Yeah. They want you to work hard to go to the right people. There is a limit, certain period of couple weeks. I have been cut off in the past, but you know what? The response we get is fantastic. So it's worth doing. The people who come to our sessions really appreciate the content that they have access to. So it's a win-win for everyone. But the thing about almost everything, when it becomes to being a successful business owner, you have to do the work. And it is not easy and it is not glamorous. And if you don't do it, you will not succeed. And I could say so many things about that. You did ask, we did before when we were kind of talking about the session, you were saying, and I hope it's okay if I mention it now, but some of the biggest mistakes that I see people making on LinkedIn. So there are a few things that I see people doing that I don't think is going to resonate well with their audience. One of the biggest mistakes I see people make, if you are thinking, if you're listening to this podcast and you're like, I am in corporate right now, which was me, but one day I want to start my own business. I see this a lot with HR people. You must be your own brand on LinkedIn. You cannot be the brand of your business. So what does that look like? That looks like you only sharing content from the company you work for today. That looks like you having your background image as the image that is for the company that you work for. That is not your brand, and that can disappear at any moment, and it's not even something you have any control over. So if you are listening to this podcast today and you are not a business owner and you have the business wallpaper for your company as your background, please remove that and become your own brand. Because if you're too closely attached, what will happen is, and this happens all the time, and this is a bit of a gut wrench for people who go through this. I've been through it because I went from being attached to large global organizations, Unilever, Wrigley, Grainger, not as well known, but still known in the industrial supplies industry. Still, I'm attaching myself to really big brands. I make the joke that someone who's got a senior level position for a big company can sneeze on LinkedIn and they'll get 100 plus reactions. And a small business owner could put this incredible thought piece out there, very well written, and get like two or three likes, right? The problem is, and we don't realize this, we are all doing it. I'm going to put my hand up and say I've done it. You're really piggybacking off the brand that you are attached to and the power that is associated with that. So when you go out on your own, you're going to have to work twice as hard to get half as far. And I like to think that I've overcome that hurdle, but it's something I have to continually be conscious of and overcoming every single day. And it's really hard emotionally too for people to get out there and leave a large bank or a large CPG and then try to have the same response from the community. I hate to say it, but I think sometimes people are just using us for the big company we work for. So understanding that you have to have your own brand. The other thing I find, if you're a business owner and you're trying to make an impact, you need to have a professional photo or something that could pass as a professional photo. What our iPhones are capable of today is incredible. Get the right lighting, the right makeup, or whatever it is, whatever you think suits you best. A bright color, like I'm wearing a bright color today. Having a bright color in your photo can help. I don't on LinkedIn. So if anyone goes, they'll be like, Amy, you are wearing black in your photo. But it can help to have a bright color. in your photo. And then people try to take their wedding photos and kind of crop people out and put people know. We know when we see a boutonniere, we know there's a gloss to wedding photos that is very specific to those types of photos. So it doesn't really work. But be conscious of what's in the background, how close you are. Cognitively, I used to be in marketing and advertising. Cognitively, we really like when people make eye contact with us. Go through other LinkedIn profiles, see what you like about what other people are doing, and then take a little bit of this and a little bit of that and then make it your own. But you do have to make it your own. And you should have a summary that tells people a little bit about what you do, but also who you are without, and it's a challenge, right? Like, don't be too salesy in it, but definitely advocate for yourself in it a little bit or tell people things that might surprise them about you.
Do you ever use long form, like longer form articles? Do you ever publish those? I don't think I've seen that as I've watched you post. Do you ever do that? For example, anything over, let's say, 1,000 words, maybe 2,000-3,000 words, like to mix it up.
I do that a fair amount, but not probably what you were thinking of when you were saying it. I don't post articles to LinkedIn very often. Like, I don't write an article that is housed on LinkedIn. My blogs all live on the First 30 website, but I do a lot of long form. So I would consider the post that I was telling you about previously, where I had a stalker, that is actually in my featured content. That's a long form written post, and LinkedIn loves those posts. So that is a really great way. And listen, nothing like anything in life, it's not going to happen all at once. You know, my husband, we were talking about him earlier. He just had this trending video that got hundreds and thousands of views on TikTok. And I said, did the sky open up and money start falling out of it? The people think they could just go on, have a trending post, and that's it. They're set for life. That, as we know, in the real world, that's not what happens. If you just are going to get on there and post once or once a month, you're not going to get a lot of traction. So you post some long form, you post some images with a little bit of text, you post some polls. LinkedIn likes their polls. LinkedIn does not like anything in their algorithm, trending strongly in their algorithm, that takes people off LinkedIn. So if you post a link, like today, you're not going to get rewarded on LinkedIn for posting similar content over and over again. They don't like when you use the same image. So we have a webinar image. We've used it already. I knew that that was going to happen, but some people do want to know. We did have more registered people come into our Zoom webinar for tomorrow by posting it. So it worked, but it wasn't a hit, let's say. But, and another thing that's important about this, so mix up your content. Don't take people off. If you want to tag, if you want to put a link to something else, put it in the comments, like comment on your own post and put it there. Don't forget, if you have a business page, like your post with your business page. People don't necessarily like being the first one to like a post. So if there's already a like up there, that can actually help you get that initial traction you need for LinkedIn to kind of recognize that that's a post that's trending. So a variety of content. One of the mistakes that I see people make is the same template, the same type of image, every post with a new quote on it. That is not going to work very well. It just, for whatever reason, people think they're saying the same thing over and over and over again. They're not going to engage with that content as much. And LinkedIn, therefore, is not going to reward you for that content as much. One of the things I forgot to say was that if you do post video on LinkedIn, you should post that content from native content. So don't put it up on Vimeo or YouTube and then post it. You should put it up as the video, like link it as a media file from LinkedIn, because LinkedIn likes that better. And when it comes on LinkedIn, then it automatically plays. So those are some of the things that I try to do to build up that kind of credibility and interest and different content. It appeals to me because my mind, I like to try different things and like try to write in different ways so that I find it fun. But not everyone listening to this is going to find it fun So if you don't find that sort of thing fun and engaging and something you want to be doing with 2 to 3 hours of your day, then hire somebody. Then people are more than welcome to reach out to me. I know some really good people in this space. But because if you're not going to make an investment in it, whether it be time or money, it's probably not going to work very well for you.
Can you tell me a little bit about how you measure engagement? On LinkedIn, you see impressions, and then, of course, there are likes and there are comments. So can you help our audience understand what impressions is really telling you about the success of a post? And obviously, the more comments you get, the better, and the more likes you get, the better. But what is this whole thing about impressions?
I love that you asked this question, because I think most, and I am going to put my hand up and say, I get caught up in this too. We get very caught up in what I would refer to as the vanity metric of our posts. Like, ooh, I got, 200 likes. That's so exciting. That doesn't really mean anything for a business owner unless ultimately, not that day, but in that next 6 months or year, if that effort is not translating into business, like you making money, your business making money really at the end of the day, then that is you just building your brand, but you're not necessarily building what you need to through LinkedIn, if you know what I'm saying. So it is important to look at these metrics. I know that LinkedIn rewards comments, and this is a huge mistake that people make. And I know the people that do this too, and I stop commenting on their posts. I stop engaging with them. If someone comments on your post, especially if they do it quickly, comment back. That LinkedIn likes that, number one. And so does the human being who took the time to comment on your post. I have a group of people in my network. I know I'll comment on their posts and they won't even acknowledge that not just me, but anyone has commented on their post. And that's a very quick and easy way for your profile on LinkedIn to fizzle out, because LinkedIn doesn't like it when you do that. And again, the humans that you're trying to build a relationship with don't like that either. So that is definitely something. LinkedIn likes when commenters start chatting with each other on LinkedIn. So if you have something that someone's responded to and then someone else in your network responds to their comment and so on and so forth, that will help the algorithm promote you. So that is good. It's not easy to achieve that though. So something to consider is, how do you start a conversation? And that's what I mean by taking a position. When you take a position on LinkedIn, you might get more conversation going on as well. It is a risk, of course. You have to think about what you're going to take a position on, but that is one way to get conversation going. Definitely likes, immediate likes are good. LinkedIn likes when a lot of things happen all at once on your posts. You can push, sometimes you see people liking their own posts. I used to think, oh, they're liking their own post. What's going on there? But they're liking their own post because it pushes it back out into your feed. And that's actually a good thing. So I would post something. If I wanted it to get a little more of a nudge, I would post it in the morning at around 8 or 8:30, and I might like it myself around the time, my local time right now, which is 12 o'clock, between 12 and 1 o'clock, because people are taking lunch. What are they doing at lunch? They're checking their social media. So think about when you were asking me about what's the right time to post. Think about, when is your audience, the audience that you want to nurture, on the platform? I know for my audience, it's between 8 and 9 o'clock. So that's when I'm posting, or back again at 12 o'clock as backup if I didn't get my post up at 8. So that's when you should be posting.
Such valuable and wise insight about this beast called LinkedIn. So many people are going to find so beneficial to building their platform. You've given such concrete ideas and have shared so generously. Thank you so much, Amy.
It's my pleasure. I do find that we all need a break from social media. So I know that by around Christmas time last year, I will admit I don't want to call it burnout, but like, if I'm just using the term loosely, I was burnt out. I was tired. I had a really busy year. It's not easy running your own business, as you know, and I needed a break. And that included a break from LinkedIn. I didn't make any big announcement or anything. I just quietly stopped going on LinkedIn for about 2 weeks. And that's probably a good time to do it over the holidays. I had no inspiration left because it was all used up. And I think we have to be aware of that. So unless we can schedule things and get ahead of it, just maybe take a break and come back in a few weeks. I think we all put so much pressure on ourselves to be perfect. Because you also, you know, especially I do a lot of video content now. And you have to be, you know, I have my lighting, and that means I have to have, you know, for me, because it's, again, it's just vanity. I have to have like the right makeup, and that's a lot of work, you know, to get all that going, to set up your little home studio. So sometimes just give yourself a break, because if you do, then the ideas will come. And you know what? If you're not in the mood to post, go on and comment on some other people's posts. Maybe there's someone you'd really like to support. And I want to kind of leave on this final thought. Think about generosity. When I talked about going to your network to serve them, give something on LinkedIn. Don't just take, right? Go on and support other people, even if they're not people who are going to be your clients, or if they're other great entrepreneurs starting a business. We could all use a little boosting, right? I've had a number of people in the last 6 months just send me a little note to say, Amy, I really love your posts. You're so authentic. I get that a lot. And I love it. Every time I get a little note like that, it actually does. It buoys me. It builds me up. It makes me feel good, because we always have to remember, and I've brought it up a few times, there is a human being behind those posts. There is a human being behind those comments. And inviting you to connect and asking for your help. You can't always help people. You can't always make things happen for them, but you can be kind to them, and you can acknowledge them as the human being that they are.
That is a powerful note to end on. And I love that it's so encouraging and uplifting. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Not my favorite part of the episode, because I really love the interview that we just did, but I do also enjoy our words of the episode. So here we are to share our words of the episode. Dave, how about you go first?
Okay, my word today is peregrination. And the definition is, it means something along the lines of a journey, which is perfect for Journey 66. It's a journey, especially a long or meandering one, which, my gosh, peregrination is a great word for the writing journey or telling your family story. It is a peregrination. Anyway, here's the quote. I was reading a book called A Hunter's Road. Nor did he seem to be a victim to the kind of random mental peregrinations afield that plague the narrator, whose mind tends to wander off on unrelated tangents, dreaming of buffalo and Indians and other such nonsense.
What if we called our business Peregrination 66?
Let's make a change now. Let's do it.
That's not a mouthful at all, is it?
Peregrination. All right. How about you?
Well, mine is found from a quote from one of your favorite authors, Cormac McCarthy. We were traveling, road tripping to the solar eclipse, and we listened to a podcast called Close Reads. They were huge Cormac McCarthy fans, and so we went back to an episode where they celebrated him as an author right after he died, and everybody was devastated. And so the people on this podcast were sharing favorite passages, and one of the members of this podcast shared this sentence, actually a longer form than the one that I'm going to be sharing. And the word jumped out at me, and I didn't know what it meant. My friend knew what it meant. I didn't know what it meant. And it was torsional, T-O-R-S-I-O-N-A-L. And it means the twisting or wrenching body by the exertion of forces tending to turn one end or part about a longitudinal axis while the other is held fast or turned in the opposite direction. So you can kind of see it. It's like a twisting of like a spring almost. You can see in your mind what that would look like. And so here's the quote, and it's from The Road, which I need to go back and read. I loved this book, and it seems to be a favorite among McCarthy fans. So here's part of the sentence. Once there were brook trout in the streams in the mountains, you could see them standing in the amber current where the white edges of their fins wimpled softly in the flow. They smelled of moss in your hand, polished and muscular and torsional.
That is an amazing sentence, two or three sentences, excuse me.
Cormac is amazing. I'm going to get some of his books on audio when I go on my next road trip. All right. Well, I think that's it for this wonderful episode. Thanks to Amy Davies. I am Melissa Parks.
And I'm Dave Getz.
Now buckle up and write.